they were the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. I mean, chapter 28, which is the chapter that speaks mainly about the protection that the Lord extended to Jacob. The covenant between Jacob and God is in this chapter, and that's the covenant of protection. You may observe that in the Psalms, whenever it's written something like we ask the protection from God, we say protection from God of Jacob. Why not God of Abraham or God of Isaac? Because Jacob is the one that represented the covenant of protection. So let's read from verse 1, chapter 28. You remember that at the end of chapter 27 that Rebecca came to her husband and told him in a clever way, let us send Jacob away to get married. She was clever that she didn't mention the fact that she's trying to protect him. She overheard his brother saying furious, and he was planning to kill him because he stole his blessing. And she solved the problem by sending him away. She was a very wise lady that she didn't say that to anyone. She didn't like to make that problem. So she just found another trick by saying to Isaac, let us send him to get married in my family, which are away. But she meant by that sending him away until the fury and anger of his brother will settle. She knew that Esau is of that type that becomes angry, and maybe after some time he settles and everything will be okay, then Jacob will come back. She sacrificed her own self by that, because he was the only support for her. Her other son was not very loving to her. His wives are pain for her, and her husband is dying. The only one that gives her joy is Jacob, but she felt that it's not bad. It would be very bad to lose both of them if they kill each other, or at least will be another Cain, as Cain killed his brother. Then she didn't like that to happen again in the family. So in a clever way, she said to Isaac, let us send him to get married, not just to protect him. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you, make you fruitful, and multiply you. That's the prayer of Isaac, my son, that you may be an assembly of people, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. This is the prayer that he blessed his son with. So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. It is a very strange mission, different from any other mission. Like when Abraham's servant went to find a wife for Isaac, he had gold, a lot of possessions, a lot of camels and donkeys and things like that. But Jacob will leave with a stick, no money, no gold, even not a donkey, not a camel, and by himself. A very tough mission that he'll start. in verse 6 it says, Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take himself a wife from there, and that he blessed him. He gave him a charge, saying, You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother, and had gone to Padan Aram. Also Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife in addition to his wives, to the wives he had. So he was nice. He felt that if my parents or my dad particularly is not happy with my wife being from the land, let me take a wife from his family. Observe again that he's biased toward his dad. If Jacob is biased towards his mom, like Jacob is going to marry from his mother's side, so his brother is going to marry from his father's side. So he went to his uncle, his father's brother, and got married to one of his daughters. Now the journey of Jacob starts. Jacob.
Sir, can I ask a question? Why did he set out with nothing?
Why did he say?
Why did he leave with nothing? He says, why did Jacob leave?
Well, very likely that the maybe Isaac was not very willing to sacrifice for him. Maybe he went in a hurry and he didn't like to cause his brother to be more furious. Maybe Rebecca in her wisdom didn't like to create more trouble by him robbing part of the money. We don't know. But he was ascetic, like comments from St. John Chrysostom, that Jacob was very ascetic. Like, his style was like that. Even shorter, you'll see in his prayer, he'll ask for nothing other than food and clothes. Like, he was very ascetic. And many of the fathers commented on this attitude, that he was not after money, he was not after possession. So he left with nothing, maybe not to create any problem with his brother, especially what happened that he took the blessing he didn't like, to show that the blessing is materialistic anyway.
So, I'm sorry, on that note, when he would arrive to Laban's house, what would be the reason why Laban would give him one of his daughters if he didn't have...
To work. He has to work. The only way, he's not going to take one of the daughters on the go, like what happened with Isaac. Isaac took a daughter, or at least his... Abraham's servant took the lady and went, Rebecca. But with Jacob, he's incapable to do that. So he had to stay and work. He had to work very hard. All his possession is his physical strength. He was very strong physically. So he'll work, and based on that work, maybe his uncle will agree to give him his daughter as a wife, and that's what's going to happen. He worked 7 years to marry one of the daughters, and another 7 years for the other. The only way, only thing that he can offer is work. But he started with a stick, nothing other than a stick, sleep, even not a tent. Like shortly when you see he slept, not in a tent, just along in the desert, on the ground. And that's a style of asceticism. But that's the time that the Lord met him. Actually, Jacob met the Lord twice in two nights. And there are a bit of similarity between the two nights. A status that he is with nothing. Too scared. Not protected at all. Feeling that there is nothing. Very ascetic and very scared and in danger. Real in danger. And both times, the Lord assured him protection. So it became a symbol that protection for Jacob and belonging. Like the covenant is, I belong to him, he provides me protection. And that's actually the thing that we learn from this chapter for us, for our life. If you belong to God, He'll provide protection. It's like loyalty. If I'm loyal to an organization or a party, or then the responsibility of this party is to protect me. If I'm loyal to a king, then that king is responsible to protect me. Now the idea is the vision that I am loyal to God, and God is to protect me. And that's His nature. Otherwise, He's not God. He cannot be God. If I belong to Him, if I'm loyal to Him, and He doesn't protect. And that's the faith of Jacob. That God of Jacob is the God of protection, because Jacob belonged to Him. He will make a vow. And that vow is belonging. You are my God. I belong to you. And the evidence of my belonging to you will come shortly. What's the evidence? And the outcome of this belonging is that I'm protected. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night, because the sun had set. He took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head. In other translation, under his head, like a pillow. And he laid down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached the head to heaven, and there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you will lie, I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to west and east, north and south, and in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you, will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. Very comforting words that came to him in one of the worst conditions that he can imagine. He left unprotected, not having weapon, not even knife, sleeping in the night, in the dark, in a desert that there were beasts there. The evidence is that his brother used to hunt and live on hunting. So there were beasts there. And his brother is familiar with this, because he can go to the bush and desert, and that's his way. But Jacob is not. Jacob is a man that lived with his mom in the tent all his life. That may be the first night that he sleeps away. So he's not used to that. And it's dark, not protected. What prevents his brother from following him? He can chase him easily. It's only one night. He can see the way, possibly the trace of his feet, or dogs. Dogs chasing the place is known since this 4,000 years. So he's a hunter. His brother, he can chase him. Can he kill him? So he doesn't know where to go. Laban is a man that we observe that he is a bit materialistic. Like, you may remember when Abraham's servants gave him present and things like that. But Jacob is going with nothing. And you'll see that later when Jacob returns back, he has a wonderful prayer that says that I'm short from all your generosity to me. I crossed the Jordan with a stick. I'm now two arms, when he returned back after 20 years. But that shows that when he went empty-handed. He slept there, and the Lord always come to us when we are in a status like this. First, very aesthetic, sleeping on the ground. He has no pillow, so his head is on a stone, not covered, maybe cold in the night, scared. He doesn't know the future, but obedient. He's obedient to his parents. that blessed him to go. And he is leaving everything to God. To tell the truth, he had no choice. Like when we speak of him that he is deceiving or deceptor or something like that, it's not true. He had no choice. He tried. He told his mom, no, my dad will curse me. She said, your curse is on me. Just listen to me. Listen to what I say. Do that. He was obedient to his mom. And there was no choice for him. And now he is in that situation. Too scared. That's why the Lord comes to him with the wonderful words. These words are very dear to me particularly. Because at one stage in my life, I was thinking of monasticism. And I went to Deir Abu Ma'ar and stayed there for some time. And it was Abuna Armea, who was still living there, that he told me that you look a bit pushing yourself for monasticism, as if it's not your way. And he told me that, leave that with me, I'll pray the Mass tomorrow and I'll call you after the Mass and I'll tell you what's your future. He's a man of prophetic power. He's still living, Abuna Armea. He may be now 80 years old. And after the Mass, he called me and he said, no, you are not becoming a monk. You'll be married. You'll have many children. You will go to a new land. And the Lord tells you, and he repeated the same words, that where you go, I am with you. And I'll bring you back to this land, which is the only segment that I didn't understand in my life. And he ended by, your blessing is the blessing of Jacob. And that's why the name Jacob chased me all my life. And when I was ordained by the name Jacob, I was relieved. I was relieved. When the Pope mentioned Jacob, I felt that, yes, yes, it's not coincidence, it's not. But anyway, the words are very, very sweet when you know that the Lord is telling you, wherever you go, I'll bless you, I'll be with you, and I'll not leave you without fulfilling the promise that...
Can I ask a little question?
Yes.
So when God says, I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you, does that imply that he could leave him? Not until he's done it.
If you are scared that I would leave you, because every one of us can do mistakes, and then based on our mistakes we feel that the Lord will leave me because I did mistakes. So the Lord is giving him assurance that I will not leave you. And be relaxed. The very strong words. Actually, a commentary from St. John Chrysostom about this segment is very, very sweet. He speaks about how gentle the Lord is. When you are in deep trouble and in deep danger, he comes to you to relax you, saying, don't worry, I am with you, I'm not going to leave you. Just trust me, follow me, and protection will be provided. And he'll be appreciative of that. Actually, he is a God-fearing person, Jacob. And his godly attitude, his attitude is towards God. Like, he immediately said something to the Lord. He appreciates that. When he got out of the dream, he did marvelous things, as we'll read now. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place. And I did not know it, because I was scared. I didn't know that God is in this place. The wealth of commentaries from the Father about this ladder is amazing. There are 10 pages commentary on what's that ladder that he saw. The Orthodox people, including the Greek and the Copt, they say St. Mary. Because some of our hymns and songs, we speak about St. Mary to be the ladder, Jacob's ladder. Afrahat, one of the very early fathers of the 3rd century, said that it has to be Christ. It has to be Christ, that ladder. Why? Because in the Gospel according to St. John, the end of the chapter, he speaks that from now on you'll see the Son of Man and the angels coming on him, descending and ascending on him. So he's the ladder that And it's only natural. Some fathers spoke of it to be the cross, because that's the link between earth and heaven that will lead to the gate, because high above he saw a gate to heaven. So the ladder is the cross or Christ. The fact that he was standing on the top, this is translation different from the commentaries of the Father. The commentaries of the Father is that he is standing by it, next to it, or leaning on it. Seems that he was very big, to the extent that he is not a small thing at the top. He is the ladder, or leaning on it, because all the commentary is that he is leading the way, which is true. Christ is leading us from the earth to heaven. Now, these angels that ascending and descending has been the reason for many commentaries. Like the monasteries that were in this area, including things like St. John of Climacus, John of the Ladder, and he was in Sinai. They have an icon, which is a ladder, and they consider the angels are us, like Judas is an angel descending, and St. Paul is an angel ascending, and they show the devil catching some of those people, mainly monks, going up to catch them down. Did you see this icon?
Yeah, it's a monastery.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Sinai, yeah. It's a famous drawing. It's also in the book of Abuna Matar Miskin, The Life of Prayer. So they consider this a symbolic of ascending and descending of even us, human. St. Augustine commented on it in a different way. He said that a servant of the Lord has two lives. Life of meditation, which is high above, and life of service, which is to go down to the service. So the servant has to be charged spiritually by going up and spending time in solitude or with the Lord. Then he goes to descend to the service. So the angels are doing this job as a servant, preachers, servants, that charged by the power of the Lord and sent to serve people and guide them along the way. And the ultimate goal is heaven. There is a gate to heaven, and the top is guided by Christ, and the ladder is the link. Also in John Climacus, he considered, and some of the writers of this 6th century, they spoke always of these steps of the ladder as virtues. And that's the whole book of he's called Climacus, which is the ladder, John of the Ladder. Because of that, he made it 33 ranks, which are virtues. You ascend the virtues. You ascend the ladder until you are at the gate, acceptable to God. And he considered the logical way of one virtue leads to the other. And the highest virtue is to remember death. Remember that life is nothing on earth. It's not the end of me. The end of me is to be in heaven. So I am now well prepared. This journey that you are alone, imagine Jacob living all his life among family, his mother, his brother, and his father, and well protected with humanity. But now he's alone. No one knows ever on earth where he's sleeping, what's the future. And this is always the solitude that makes you get, again, John Chrysostom comments on that, you become devoid of pretense, human pretense. There's no human pretense anymore. Because no one knows where you are. You are not caring about humans now. You are you and God. And that reminds me by the Coptic hermits. When they go and live by themselves, they have to have an encounter with the Lord. Because there is no protection, there is no pretense, there is no humanity around you. It's you and God only. You don't need anything from this world. You are just expecting God. Then God in His mercy will come and show you that's the ladder. That's me. I'm guiding you to the gate of heaven. And the response from him was very natural, that he felt that this is has to be rewarded by, but he has to be grateful. He woke up and said, surely this is place, this God is in this place, and I didn't know. And he was afraid of the presence of God, maybe the shape of it was Christ, of course. The Lord is Christ, Son of God. Any apparition in the Old Testament of a human representing God is prefiguring, or is an apparition of Christ. The Father does not appear in any shape. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. This sentence is written on many gates in the monasteries and some churches. Some of the churches write that. And it's good to remember that it's awesome place, the house of God. The house of God is awesome. That's the gate of heaven. Some fathers actually commented on the ladder to be the church. The church is what leads us up to the gate of heaven, and also that the angels stand and ascend in the church. Then Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put at or under his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of the place Bethel. Bethel is a Hebrew word. El is God, Emmanuel, which is God with us. Gabriel, the power of El. God, El, Samuel, the word El is God. Bet is like Arabic, Bet. Bet El means house of God. So he called it Bethel, Bethel, or Bet El, house of God. What did he do about that pillar and pouring oil? Where did he learn about pouring oil? It's consecration. He consecrated it to be an altar. Where did he learn that from? Very likely from the family, Abraham, Isaac. He saw that happening. Abraham always built altars, wherever he, to build an altar. There are many things like rituals in the Bible that are not explainable if there is no additional information. Like when we speak to Protestant people, say that you have to rely on tradition. This is one example. What's that? Way? How to pour it? How to consecrate something? There are many things that are written in the Bible. The only explanation is the surrounding tradition that will explain it. But that's the way he learned from his father and grandfather how to consecrate an altar to the Lord. Where did he get the oil from? Was he carrying it with him? Very likely. St. John Chrysostom says yes, he was carrying that. Why? Was it a type of food for the journey? We don't know. But he used that oil to consecrate the altar. The name of the city was Luz previously, which is a type of plant. Symbolic of being alert. You read that in the book of Jeremiah, when he saw a plant of Luz. But anyway, that was an old name. Then he called it House of God. Actually, God liked that from him. Later he would forget, and he'll try to live in another place, and the Lord will appear to him in a dream, remind him about his vow. Because he said that this is the house of the Lord, this is the place of the presence of God, I have to live in it. And the Lord reminded him, because he said he'll build the house of the Lord there. Then Jacob made a vow, and see this vow. Maybe the first time in the whole Bible to speak about vows. made a vow is translated this way, but sometimes translated he prayed. So it seems that the old Hebrew word for praying and making vow is the same word. I read that to one of the fathers. Origen had a whole book about vows, and he said that. That's the first vow. And we always have the argument about vows. Is vow, giving vows, is something important? It is very important. It makes the relationship between you and God vivid, alive. You expect something, you offer something, and this is a mutual agreement. And this, we use it always. And it works. It works a lot. It makes miracles in our life. What was his vow? If God will be with me, keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and the clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. The Lord will be my God, because at that time there were many gods. People worship different gods. So he's now selective. The Lord that I saw, the God of my father, Isaac and Abraham, will be my God. So I belong. That's why we say that that's the covenant of belonging. And the evidence of that is that this stone which I've set as a pillar shall be God's house. I'll build the house for the Lord. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So this is the covenant of belonging. That the house of God and giving the tithes. This is the belonging. I belong to God if I give my tithes, and if the house of the Lord I build, and I share in that. And God is my God. And that's the covenant between me and God. And the Lord will endorse that, and he will offer me according to my plan. Observe his request from the Lord. St. John Chrysostom commented on that a lot. He didn't ask luxury. He didn't ask power, wealth. He just asked in a very ascetic way, just food and clothes. St. John Chrysostom say, be wise, don't ask for much, because this is promised to be added to you. Like, why to waste a wonderful chance to ask for something by asking for these things? It will be added to you. The Lord Jesus Christ made it clear that you ask for the kingdom of heaven and these things will be added to you. So you receive it anyway. So just be clever to ask for the something that is lasting and valuable, which is pertaining to the kingdom of heaven. Ask for things that about your future in heaven. Ask about your dwelling with the Lord. And then these things will be added to you. This is the nature of our King, that he wouldn't let us live without the luxury of having things that we need. But if you ask for it, it's a mistake, because it means that you reduce the thing. We have to say to the Lord that from the depths of our heart. Now, the whole idea is that status that we may be in, which is not to think of people. There's no human pretense anymore. I am with the Lord alone. We'll pass through that. Sometimes on earth, and definitely at the end of our life. At the end of our life, we'll see that. You, one day, you'll be alone. There is no, even if you are in hospital, surrounded by hundreds of people, you are alone. Because you know that those people have their own way to live forward, but you are not. You are leaving. And this is a feeling that if you are not prepared to understand that the Lord can appear to you with this ladder, showing you that's the way, that's the gate of heaven, and that's your future, and that's your joy in it, and that's your belonging to me now, you receive, the gate is open for you, then it would be a mistake that we will be like Ish, that thought of materialistic share. His mistake, that brother, was that all his thinking, ignoring this idea, ignoring the idea that I'm being with God. We fall in that mistake, by the way, sometimes. all our imagination and our life is concerning wealth and power and time on earth and human pretense. What people say about me, how can I convince them, what's my image, and so on. Until the day will come that you are devoid of all these ideas, such that the door will be open to you to understand that there is a ladder that can take you up to the gate of heaven, and that's the house of the Lord, that you are on it and you are prepared for it, for the glory that you exposure to the Lord. Thank you for listening. Do you have any question or comment? The rest of life of Jacob is very, very nice, because I like the night of Jacob. Every person has a night, the dark night. He had that night, chapter 28, but the real night when he returned back to meet his brother with 400 militant people waiting for him. He had a similar night by himself, alone, in the darkness, when he had an encounter with the Lord. That's the day that his name changed from Jacob to Israel. Thank you for listening.
Close to you.